Hello and welcome to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CFBU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines. I'm Daniel Angrenon and I'll be taking you through the next hour. Today I'm thrilled to have live with me Shannon Mann. Shannon has worked as a communications officer, quartermaster, and deckhand on the Farley Mowat and Steve Irwin for the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. She's traveled around the world to Antarctica, the Mediterranean, and the Galapagos Islands. You can see her at work on the recently wrapped up fifth season of Whale Wars on Animal Planet. This year, Shannon continues to be hard at work with the organization Backyard Activists, which she founded and works alongside Shack 7 member Jake Conroy. Welcome to the show, Shannon.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. So I was wondering if we could start off, if you could just tell us your story about how you got into animal rights, and then after why you decided to join the Sea Shepherd crew.
It's actually kind of a funny story because I was always compassionate and interested in animals, and I grew up in spending my summers in northern Saskatchewan in the woods, so I kind of have always had this appreciation and kind of respect for nature. But I didn't know anyone who was an activist or really that involved in doing anything for animals until I had moved to Calgary and I was walking my dog in an off-leash dog park and I saw this table set up and it had all these pictures of animals at this roadside zoo and it was horrible. It's actually called the Gazoo in Three Hills. Just so
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty horrendous place. And tabling was now one of my best friends and heroes of the the world, RJ Baylot. And so I stopped and, you know, we ended up talking for a long time and he basically became like my mentor and we would do everything in Calgary from protesting the circus and we would just anything that had to do with animals, we were there. We were pretty active. And it's funny because this is the funny part.
Yeah.
Later I thought, oh, what a nice guy. He was so so engaged. And then we would go for coffee after. And he, about a year later, he told me, well, it was actually he found my boyfriend really cute. that's why he happened to spend so much time talking to me. Yeah, we laugh about it now. But to this day, he is one of the most amazing people I know. He's still someone I really have in high regard when it comes to animal rights.
Oh, that's so sweet. So let's talk about your work on Sea Shepherds. So how did you make that journey?
Right. Okay. So then in 2005, RJ and I went to the Animal Rights Conference in LA. And that's where I first heard Paul speak. And of course, if you've heard Paul, he's so passionate and engaging. And I mean, after he finished his lecture at the AIR conference, he basically was saying, we really need crew members to go down to the Antarctic, because that was before Whale Wars. So it wasn't like everyone was clamoring to get on the ship. But he said, it will be somewhat dangerous and it might be a little dirty and it's a lot of hard work, but it will be an adventure of a lifetime. And I think I just have, you know, maybe that adventure spirit. And so immediately I sent in my application. And then I got accepted to be a crew member for the 2006-07 Antarctic campaign.
Wow. So maybe if you could, for our listeners who aren't quite aware of Sea Shepherd, what does Sea Shepherd do on these campaigns?
Well, just to make the point, Sea Shepherd is an ocean conservation organization, and it protects marine life from illegal fishing. We're well known for the Antarctic campaigns to protect the whales in the Southern Ocean, but Paulo says it's not an animal rights organization. It's a conservation organization.
Oh, that's cool. What would you say do you see as the most pressing issue facing, like, the conservation of marine life?
That is such a tough question because the ocean is facing so many crises right now. I think one of the largest issues facing the ocean is just simply the overfishing. I think almost every major fishery is in collapse right now. And people tend to just disregard that. And I think it's just not well known. So education is really important that our ocean is dying. So species are becoming decimated. There's also ocean acidification, pollution, plastics. I've traveled all over the ocean, or all over the world by sea, and you see plastic everywhere. Aww. It's horrible. Probably the Antarctic is the only place that we don't see plastic in the ocean.
The penguins don't litter as much?
No. They don't even, I mean, I've seen McDonald's and the things that the burgers come in. I've seen those floating around in the middle of the ocean.
Oh.
It's absolutely insane.
You mentioned earlier that one of the things that drew you to it was the sense of adventure and danger. If we could touch on that for a minute, as, like, I've seen on Whale Wars, and as I've been talking to you, you can attest to it, there is definite danger that comes with going and effectively sabotaging and stopping ships from killing animals. So there's this culture of violence because these fishers, hunters, they seem to be disregarding the lives of the activists just as much as the whales, sharks, seals, etc. that they're hunting. Can you comment on that? Like, what have you seen in regards to how they've treated you?
Well, I mean,
and your crewmates.
Yeah, their motivation is profit.
Mm-hmm.
But the danger with Sea Shepherd, although I think we do an amazing job at mitigating the risks, is every time you go to sea, and especially when you hit those, you know, the roaring 40s and furious 50s, there is an element of danger just in that, just in being at sea. But then when you face an opponent like, for instance, the Japanese whaling fleet, who has endless supply of funds, it seems, and a huge motivation to kill whales, their concern is not about our safety.
No.
Their primary concern is stopping us from stopping them.
Yeah.
And every year, honestly, every year, it seems that they get more and more violent. This year, we had a few crew members injured by crew members on the harpoon ships.
Yeah.
In my experience, from the first time I went down to the Antarctic, the whaling fleet seemed to be scared of us. I think they didn't know what to expect, and they thought there was these crazy activists on board, and they didn't know what we were going to do. And then over the years, they have just done more and more and become more and more aggressive and violent towards us. We've had flashbang grenades thrown at us. My gosh, this year we are so fortunate that they actually didn't kill some of the crew members on board. They were throwing huge grappling hooks into the small boats and then ripping them up via like a pulley system on their decks. So one of the grappling hooks landed in the seat that there was actually a crew member in. And it caught the seat in the delta and then the edge of the small boat and ripped that all to shreds. It is absolutely, I don't know, a stroke of some kind of intervention that crew member didn't get impaled and hauled up on that hook.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm sort of at a loss from that.
It can be pretty scary. But again, like, we have to be sure that we don't injure a single one of their crew members.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you probably saw too, the Audie Gill was run over by the Shonan Maru a few years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
And the problem as well is that it is Wild West in the Southern Ocean. There's no one to turn to really to kind of uphold international seafaring laws.
Which I'm guessing is partially why you guys are there, because someone's got to protect the whales. And actually, that was leading into what I was going to ask next. What are government responses that you see? Because I'm guessing not many people are on your side.
You know, I think the government of Australia faces quite a challenge, because I think the Australian government is in quite the conundrum, because their population is hugely supportive of Sea Shepherd. They love their whales. They have the whale watching, the humpbacks. But the government, we put them in such a difficult position because, you know, it's about economics and politics and trade with Japan. So They don't want to help us. And they actually, in the past, have denied visas to crew members. And at one point, they didn't want to allow our ship into port. But because of the public outcry, as soon as Paul goes to the media with that, everything gets reversed. Oh, no, there was a glitch. Yeah, your crew members are welcome. But you're right, too. It shouldn't really be us that's going down there to stop the whaling fleet from killing whales in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary. This is the responsibility of governments across the world. But nobody has the guts to do it. Nobody feels inclined to battle the Japanese government because of trade.
And they have such a stronghold on the other. Yeah,
it's all, it comes down to profit and trade and politics and money, essentially.
Yeah.
Just like so many other industries.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we see this parallel across the board with any industry that exploits animals, right?
Mm-hmm. And we did a campaign a couple of years ago because, again, people just don't know that the bluefin tuna is going to be extinct in a few years. There's no doubt about it. And the problem, I have nothing against, of course, like any Japanese person, but it's the Japanese fishing fleet that is also taking a lot of bluefin tuna and storing it in warehouses because to them, it's the economy of extinction. Once the bluefin are extinct, then they hold a massive amount of stocks and they can set the price.
Wow. Without realizing that if there wasn't this overfishing and, you know, perhaps the bluefin could continue, although, again, we don't want the exploitation of them anyways, mm-hmm. but that's very interesting.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate because a lot of these longer-lived species, they take a long time to reach sexual maturity, so they don't actually start producing offspring until sometimes, like, orange roughy, they're 30, 50 years old.
Wow.
You know, and now you go to the markets and they're selling orange roughy that are 4 years old. And you see that across the board in the fishing industry is that fish are getting smaller and smaller and smaller because the fish aren't surviving long enough to grow large anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Overfishing is such a serious issue, and it is something that people really can make a difference. People can choose more sustainable fish, or even better yet, just don't eat fish at all. There really truly isn't a sustainable fishery anymore.
Yeah, so true. All right, so through your time on Sea Shepherd, I'm sure you and your crew have employed many tactics for trying to stop whalers, fishers, etc. Mm-hmm. What tactics have you used and what have you found to be the most effective?
I guess that varies campaign to campaign. For instance, when we went up to the east coast of Canada, all we did was basically take footage of the seal slaughter. People beating, clubbing, shooting baby seals. And with that, that was really instrumental in influencing the European Parliament to ban the importation of seal products. So for that campaign, all we needed to do is document and educate. But for instance, for our Antarctic campaigns, although we deploy many tactics, and I'm sure you've seen them on Whale Wars, such as throwing rotten butter, which actually, I want to clarify, is not butter, because it is a vegan ship. But that is an issue that has come up.
So it's like Earth Balance?
It is. Well, it's basically we get it from a company. It's not like we have purchased butter and let it rot.
Yeah.
And the actual name for it is butyric acid.
Okay.
But it's not harmful. Like, it's, you know, like citric acid.
So it's basically butter.
Yeah, it just stinks. Yeah. Like, the point of it is it just absolutely stinks. And then, obviously, we've tried to slow down and stop the harpoon vessels, but really the most effective thing we can do is find the Nisshin Maru, which is the big factory ship,
mm-hmm.
and follow it. All we have to do is prevent the harpoon ships from transferring dead whales onto the Nisshin Maru, and then they can't go out and catch anymore because they have no place to take them.
Oh, okay.
So if we can find the Nisshin Maru and just follow it, that ends their whaling for the season.
And what has been the trouble in finding the Nisshin Maru?
It's a big ocean.
It's funny, right? Yeah.
It's a big ocean. And every year, they've changed their tactics and strategies to combat ours. And so the last few years, they've contracted more vessels and they've followed us. It's essentially this, to begin the campaign, it's essentially this big game of cat and mouse, like who can find who first?
Yeah.
Because if we can find the Nisshin Maru first before they find us, we shut down whaling for the season. But if we find, let's say, a harpoon vessel, and, you know, if we see them, they see us, then they just follow us, and we can never catch up to the Nisshin Maru because they just relay our coordinates. So it's the most amazingly frustrating thing on the planet. And it is, I mean, this season, unfortunately, they found us.
Yeah. I'm reminded of, like, a game of chess where only the kings are left and it's a stalemate, you know? Because...
And, you know, our ships, like, we don't have the speed. So the harpoon ships go 22 knots and we're maxed out at 14-15. And so we can't outrun them. So once we've got them, we're kind of stuck with them. And that's when we deploy the other tactics to try to stop the harpoon ships. Yeah, so we will drop lines in the water and, you know, various tactics. But sometimes they've provided to be somewhat effective. But, you know, unfortunately this past year, we couldn't quite shake our tail.
Yeah.
But next year we're going back again with, I'm sure, a faster ship. I don't actually know much about the new ship, the Sam Simon. Thank you, Sam Simon, for buying us a new ship, and I really hope it's fast. Yeah. And, you know, we're lucky, too, to have that support from Bob Barker a few years ago, who, what an amazing man. Oh, my goodness. Like, isn't he just everyone's favorite? I love him.
I think everyone wants him to be their grandfather.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, we replayed one of his shows a couple weeks ago,
really?
And I was just kind of, like, awestruck by his voice. I mean, the things he said were incredible, but I was just like, I could listen to this man for hours, I think.
Yeah.
Especially because he's got such great things to say.
And he's so compassionate.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does a lot for animals.
Earlier, we were touching on the seal hunt in Canada. You wrote this article where you talk about, you know, the many brutal ways in which these young seals are killed, but you also talk about how it is illegal to bear witness in this hunt without a permit, and, you know, you said that the fact that you were able to be there to document it and to share it was really a great step. Do you want to comment more on these pro-hunting, anti-activist laws that we see in Canada and how organizations such as Sea Shepherd oppose them?
It's really an outrage, actually, that essentially we are in open ocean. We have every single right to be there, and we were not interfering in that hunt. Paul knows exactly where the line is, and we get close to the line, but we don't cross it.
Yeah.
And he knew exactly that that's what we needed to do to be effective in that campaign. But it's ridiculous. Like, the government, a Coast Guard vessel, rammed into the Farley Mowat, and then we were all arrested. They boarded our ship with the Marine Special Unit, boarded our ship, threw people to the ground, arrested everyone, took our ship. We never got the Farley Mowat back. It's a violation of our rights as individuals. The government knows exactly that having that footage out there is going to hurt the seal hunt, because I challenge anyone who thinks that that is a humane hunt to go and bear witness. Problem is, it's illegal.
You can't.
Yeah, and every single year, I've spoken with Rebecca Aldworth, who does a lot for that, for the seals in the East Coast, and every year they change the laws to get permits too. You used to be able to apply for a permit, which Sea Shepherd would never be granted, but HSUS was. And so initially you'd apply for the permit and you would get the permit for the whole year. When we were on the SEAL campaign a couple years ago, she was telling me that then they had to apply every single day for a new permit. And then sometimes they wouldn't grant them until 10, 11 o'clock in the morning when the sealers have been on the ice, left to their own devices since 6 in the morning.
That is sneaky.
Yeah. It's ridiculous how these laws protect the industries and are trying to violate the rights of people who are trying to do something about it.
It's kind of funny because you mentioned that Paul knows the line and he almost touches it, but it seems like the government knows the line and they just, you know, on the other side, and they just go as far as they can to...
Yeah, they can do whatever they want, really.
To shut you down. Yeah. That's so unfortunate. Like, it's mind-blowing.
Every animal industry, you know?
Exactly.
Like, people just aren't aware and we're kept in the dark. Intentionally.
And it just comes back to money.
Yep, money, and you have to seek it out. It's, I mean, this is a little off topic, but it's about, you know, here in Alberta, they're slaughtering wild horses.
Exactly.
And there's so few, but, you know, we need the space for cattle ranchers, and no, we don't.
And we need to practice for Stampede, right?
gosh, yeah.
Yeah. That's a whole other episode that I will hopefully be doing soon, actually. We have to take a short break for a station ID, but stay tuned and we will be back and continue chatting with Shannon Mann from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. Welcome back to Animal Voices. I'm speaking with Shannon Mann from Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and the founder of Backyard Activist. Let's talk a bit about Whale Wars. Now, the Animal Planet crew came on the ship to film your work trying to stop these whaling ships. You know, what were the pros and cons of having TV watching you as you're doing these campaigns?
I have to say that I'm really glad that I got to do a campaign in the Antarctic before Whale Wars started, because it has changed things, really. It changes things from the crew's perspective, because when you're on duty, especially as a quartermaster on the bridge, you have a microphone on you almost at all times. Anytime anything happens, there's a camera in your face. So you're always, I mean, I would feel kind of self-conscious sometimes about, well, what am I going to say? And I would sometimes not say something because, you know, everything's being recorded. And so I think for a lot of us, it could be awkward at times, but we definitely all appreciate that Whale Wars has brought so much attention to the cause. I mean, even as far as Sea Shepherd is concerned, we've gone from, you know, a $2 million organization, let's say when I started in 2006, and now, you know, we get approximately $10 million in donations every year. And that just allows us to be more effective. So the little bit of discomfort that comes with Whale Wars at times is definitely well worth what it does for the whales and for the cause and for Sea Shepherd.
Now, we actually met because I was invited to watch Whale Wars with you and Tommy, who you worked with on the ship.
Yep.
And it was very interesting, I found, watching you watch yourself on TV. Can you comment at all on, like, what you saw on the show, like, if there's stuff they left out, stuff they, like, changed, or, like,
well,
what was it like?
Yeah, you know we signed a contract that we're not paying.
Right.
But this is actually the first year that I've watched Whale Wars.
Okay.
So I've seen a few episodes in the past from Whale Wars season 1 to 4. But this year, just, obviously it's a little awkward, you know, watching yourself, because there's things that, I remember actually we were sitting there watching, and I was like, that's weird what I'm doing with my hands, but I was actually sitting and doing that with my hands.
Oh.
At the same time. So it's weird the things that you see, but I guess it's difficult for them because we're out at sea for months,
mm-hmm.
and they have to boil that down into, this year it was 8 episodes, so they have to obviously leave a lot out. So they try to pick, you know, where there's the most action, but it was actually surprising because this year in the Southern Ocean, we went through a lot of ice as well, and I don't think that was shown at all. And that was probably one of the times that it was, I wouldn't say scared, but, you know, going through ice in a non-ice class vessel is challenging.
Yeah.
Really, you know? And it just rumbles through the hull. And if you're down in your cabin sleeping and you're going through ice, it's like there's a thunderstorm 4 feet from your head. It is so loud. And of course you're like, oh, is there water? Like, I hope there's no water coming in. You start to have that listen. But, you know, I'm really glad that I'm on the ship with Paul, because I have 100% confidence in him. And I feel safe when he's there on board. I feel like nothing can happen.
Oh, that's great to hear.
And you know, there have been times in the past where we've been in challenging situations, let's say in the ice, and the tension on the bridge is just like you could cut it with a knife. And then, you know, Paul finally like walks out pretty casually, takes a wheel, and it all just disappears. Everyone's like, oh, okay, yeah, things are fine now.
So what is it like working with that crew? Because it sounds like you're working with a lot of people who are very passionate about animals and the ocean and, you know, this uniting vision to make the world a better place. Can you comment on what that's like?
I absolutely love the camaraderie and being a part of a vessel with full of people that have a common passion, and you're also going through this amazing experience and the highs and the lows with everyone. You become really, really close. And it's, you know, it's a 60 meter vessel and there's 40 some of us on board. So it's pretty tight quarters, and it's really remarkable how well everyone gets along. And I can say the last year, I think it was such a good crew. Like every single one of those people I could call up and say, hey, or, you know, I'd offer them a place to stay if they're in Canada. It's just a really special bond that you have with all of your crewmates, because you go through all the highs and lows of the campaign and the excitement and then the disappointment and all of that. And you also all have a job on board and you really rely on each other, because, you know, we all couldn't do our jobs if the galley didn't cook food.
Yeah.
So that's one of the most important and most difficult jobs on the ship, because they work 12 hours a day.
Wow.
And, you know, the engine room has to keep the engines going, and they work 24/7. And then the bridge, of course, is 24/7, so that you got to keep the ship running, and then you got to keep it like going in the right direction.
Oh.
And then the deck team, you know, we all rely on the deck team for all the small boat actions and the ship maintenance. And so everyone has to perform their job so that we can all mash and work and have a successful campaign. It is really cool. And I think that that's probably one of my favorite things about the campaigns, is just the people. I just adore every one of them.
Aw. It seems teamwork really seems to be the key.
Yeah. And I think, you know, not every person that comes on board is even a vegetarian. But I would say probably a third eat meat before they come on board, and a third are vegan and a third are vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
But on board, our galley is completely vegan, because we know that we don't want to be criticized for, well, yeah, you want to protect the whales, but you eat the fish, or you, mm-hmm. even factory farming has such a massive contribution on the decimation of the oceans,
of course,
that
yeah.
we just want to cut the cycle completely.
Yeah.
So that's the only way to not contribute to that is by having the vegan diet. And it's a really good place for people to learn more and get more involved in activism, because a lot of people come on board and they have their other passions outside of Sea Shepherd. So we all, you know, we talk about that. And in downtime, when the weather's too rough, sometimes we'll set up lectures. So the biologist will talk about this kind of thing, or we've had Tommy give us, we watched a video and then he was talking to us about the Great Barrier Rainforest,
yeah.
which was really cool. So we all kind of share our other experiences outside of Sea Shepherd and our other passions. So it's a good place to learn about getting involved more as well.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What about the other people you meet on your journeys? Like, I'm sure you make stops, you know, around Australia and the Galapagos. Like, what have you learned from, you know, those journeys and those people you've met?
Yeah. Well, Sea Shepherd's one of those love or hate organizations.
Yeah.
You know? So in Australia, everybody loves us, and we get such an amazing welcome, and all of our food gets donated. We don't have to buy anything there.
That's nice.
But then, you know, we sail up to the east coast of Canada and we get our lines cut while we're, you know, alongside, and our ship gets set adrift without the engines running and heading for rocks. So.
Oh.
It's quite the variety of appreciation for the organization, for sure. But as well, you know, just because I worked doing some fundraising for Sea Shepherd, and that was really cool too, because you know, we'd host these fundraisers and you'd meet all these new people that are just getting involved, and maybe they've seen Whale Wars, but it's a good starting point for a lot of people to learn more about other ocean issues as well,
mm-hmm.
because people love whales, and then they start to follow Sea Shepherd, and then they find out about the bluefin tuna or even the sea cucumbers in the Galapagos, you know, so I think that's another benefit from Whale Wars, is just being able to follow Sea Shepherd and then learn more about some of the issues facing the ocean.
The ones that don't get picked up by the mainstream media.
Yeah. People don't think bluefin tuna is cute.
Can you think of a memory that's particularly stood out as something surprising, something completely different, something unexpected about the exploitation of animals around the world? Like, we know about the dolphins in Taiji, we know about the seals in Canada. What else, you know, might people want to learn more about that you've seen, but we might not have necessarily seen?
And the fact that they're farming krill. So, fish farms. So, with overfishing, people think, okay, well, then we'll farm the fish. But then they don't understand that all these other fish are being captured from the ocean, taken out of the ocean, to go in to feed those fish. So, that's definitely not a solution. And then I've also heard that in the Antarctic, they're even going in and taking massive amounts of krill, which obviously the whales feed off of. Mm-hmm. So there's not an organism too small that...
Of course.
Yeah, that we need to protect, really.
Yeah. So changing gears a bit, Paul Watson released a statement a few weeks ago concerning his arrest and his escape from charges in Germany. I was wondering, just for anyone who hasn't heard about this yet or who might be interested, do you have any comments on, you know, the situation at hand and so what we might expect for the future of Sea Shepherd with Paul on the run?
Well, I guess for people who don't know, I can tell you a little bit about the background of how that happened. So Paul was traveling through Europe doing a speaking tour. And I mean, Paul works harder than anyone in the organization. You can't stop that man.
He seems like a man that never sleeps.
He actually doesn't really sleep that much. I've traveled with him for weeks at a time and I was exhausted by the end of it. But then he arrives in Germany and he's detained at the Frankfurt airport. He's arrested on charges that stem back to 2002, Costa Rica, and essentially it's a violation of ships traffic. So I think the charges they've changed them, they've altered them a little bit now, but to face extradition for basically a traffic ticket is absolutely insane. Mm-hmm. It just goes to show that Paul is so effective that they're basically trying to pull out anything that they possibly can to stop him. They're trying to decapitate the organization, essentially. So what was learned is that after a couple months of detention in Germany, after a week he was released on bail, but he spent then 2 months having to check in every day. And then we got word that Japan was filing extradition charges as well. And knowing that Japan has a 99% conviction rate in their courts, that Paul really had no choice. He had to leave Germany. So Paul had to leave Germany because if he was extradited to Japan, there's no possible way that he'd probably ever see the light of day again. Mm-hmm. So he fled, and now we just have to work on finding a way to kind of bring justice to this situation, because it's completely unfair. And again, it's a game of politics.
Yeah.
So there's absolutely no doubt that Japan influenced Costa Rica to reinstate those charges, and that they probably had some negotiations with Germany as well, because traveling through the rest of Europe and every other European country disregarded that alert. Mm-hmm. So why did Germany choose to arrest him? So the one thing that everyone can be sure of is that Sea Shepherd will continue on, even in the Southern Ocean this year, whether Paul is able to be on board or not. Maybe he'll lead the campaign from on shore somewhere. Maybe he'll be on a ship. We don't know. And hopefully this situation gets resolved sooner than later. But Sea Shepherd is full of very passionate and dedicated individuals, crew members, and other captains. Mm-hmm. And so everyone needs to understand that no matter what happens here, Sea Shepherd is going to continue protecting the oceans. And while there's no replacement, there can be never a replacement for Paul, we will continue on and fight our hardest for the oceans.
Exactly. That's awesome. So let's move away from Sea Shepherd for a bit. Let's talk about Backyard Activists. Now, you co-founded this with a few other people, and do you want to talk about how it started, where the idea came from, just sort of the origins of this organization?
Mm-hmm. Essentially, the idea for Backyard Activist was inspired by just the number of people that I've met over the years. People I don't even know that have contacted me on Facebook saying, I saw Whale Wars and, you know, I'm learning more about this and basically what can I do to get involved? And so initially I would look where that person was from. Okay, you're from Seattle. Well, I know someone who lives there. You could try connecting with them and they have this organization. Or so I spent all this time trying to connect people with other people and organizations and issues. And then I started to look online because I thought surely there's an easy way to find this information. And I searched and searched, and then I thought, well, that's what we have to do. There has to be some way for people to easily find out what they can do in their area. Because I was very fortunate to be able to join Sea Shepherd when I did. They were looking for crew members. I had no experience on a ship.
Yeah.
And I've had all this adventure and traveled all over the world, but you don't have to do that to make a difference. You don't have to jump on a ship and go to the Southern Ocean. There are so many causes and issues in everyone's backyard. And that's why, you know, that's why we called it Backyard Activist. So essentially what we're building is an online hub for activism. So people can just enter their location and they see all the grassroots organizations, volunteer opportunities, lectures, events, fundraisers. And also the organizations are able to post all of their needs on the website, but as well, they can list, okay, well, we need volunteers for this event. We need volunteers for this position. We also need items such as, you know, maybe Pound Rescue here in Calgary needs dog kennels or even just old blankets. And so then all the people in the community can see what they need and help fulfill those, you know, that gap, that list of things they need to do. Because if I go to the website and I'm like, oh, this organization just down the street needs something that I have in my basement that I'm not using, why not? It just builds this sense of reward for the community too. And then eventually we want to add local green business because we feel that people can also make a difference just by choosing what they purchase. Like environmentally friendly, sustainable products, and we want to support that local business. And so basically we want to create this kind of community of people who care and want to make a difference, whether it's organizations, individuals, or business.
That's absolutely fantastic. I mean, I think that's, it's so cool that you're doing this.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. We are beta testing right now, so we're just going through the website and looking for bugs, and we're just trying to polish it up a little bit, and then we'll basically send it out to a list of people who've subscribed to the Backyard Activist newsletter. So we'll send it out to those people who are already somewhat engaged and have them come onto the website and get their feedback, and then we'll release it to the public.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So once Backyard Activist has been around for a while and it's reached this well-sustained model, like what's your vision for Backyard Activist?
Well, the vision is that anyone who cares, and I really do believe that there's a growing number of those people.
Definitely.
People are becoming more aware, and this sounds a little bit quirky, but I really feel like there's nothing better than giving back. And I think it's even, there's been studies shown that, like, it makes you happy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think a lot of people, there's a lot of people out there that just don't know what to do, and if we can make it just easy for people to get involved, like, I feel like we can become happier as well and more joyful. And, you know, the feeling, the sense of reward is amazing, I think. For instance, when I was living in LA working on fundraising for Sea Shepherd, my best days were going out and doing pelican rescues. And it would be sometimes one of the most disgusting things because these poor birds, though. So when we're doing the pelican rescues, in 2 hours, you may find 12 birds that have hooks in their faces or line wrapped around their legs or their wings. And you can bring them in, fix them up. Usually we can do everything that they require just right on the small boat, and then release them back into the wild.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd end up with feather lice crawling up, like, and up your neck, and then into your hair, and you're like, hurry up, get that hook up. And sometimes they would vomit, and that would kind of give everyone But at the end of the day, like, the just the feeling that you have that now these birds aren't suffering anymore
mm-hmm.
is something that you can't, there's nothing that you could have bought that day that would make you have a better day. And I think that that's something that I'm really excited for backyard activists to share and help spread that feeling.
That's so cool. And I mean, I even think about how I've lived in Calgary all my life, except for when I moved to Ontario for university. But growing up, I couldn't find any other animal rights groups. I honestly, like, didn't know anyone else exists mm-hmm. that shared this passion. So, you know, just to be able to put that out into the public so that when someone is seeking it, they can find it. Like, that actually makes such a huge difference.
And it's also, I think, will be a valuable education tool because, let's say, like for me, when I was living in Saskatoon, I'm like, I like animals. I want to do something to help animals. So my first thought was, okay, the SPCA. That's the only thing that I knew.
Yeah.
So I, you know, went down to the SPCA and filled out the volunteer form and I started volunteering for them. But had a site like this existed, I could have seen that there's other organizations out there, like, for instance, in Alberta, like Pound Rescue and ARCS, and that are actually no-kill
mm-hmm.
shelters, and I would have volunteered with them. So it gives people the choice, too, and they might not know what's available in their community, as well as a perfect example is the Alberta Wild Horses. Until this year, I didn't know that we're slaughtering wild horses in Alberta.
Found that out this year, too.
Yeah, if this website existed, then it's like, oh, I'm interested in animals. What? Yeah. This is happening, and this is happening, and I can get involved in this organization, and I can give something to this organization. So I think it'll be good for people to be able to go on and see what's happening in their community.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So we are almost out of time. Do you have any final thoughts you want to share with our listeners? And how can people learn more about your organizations and, you know, where they might want to go if they want to learn more, stuff like that?
Okay. I just thought of one other thing.
Go for it.
That, you know, when you're saying that you didn't know that there's other people in the city that had the same views and passions, well, that's the other thing that we're implementing in Backyard Activists too, is that you see everyone else on the site. So rather than having to find friends on Facebook or, you know, add people, you actually just see everyone within your community that makes a difference. And you can see who's attending events. So it's not something where you have to make a connection with someone. Everyone, just by being on the site, is connected. And obviously you can share as much or as little information as you want to, but just, you know, that there's other people out there that care and that want to make a difference, which I think is inspiring and motivating for other people too.
That's great.
I think, you know, with so many issues facing the world right now, I mean, we have the problem with the oceans, problem with forests, like water pollution. It can seem so overwhelming for people, but if you're thinking about how you can make a difference, just know that that one small action that you might take, essentially multiply that by a million people, because there's probably that many people thinking the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if everyone just took that small step, we can change things, and we have to have hope. And so if people want to, let's say, check out the Backyard Activist site when it's ready, we have a Facebook page set up, and there's a newsletter subscription there, so you can sign up there, and then you basically be one of the first people to know when the site goes up, and you can help us, give us feedback and what you want to see there. And then also follow Sea Shepherd. And there's probably more ways to support Paul Watson that will be listed on seashepherd.org. And yeah, we should have our blog up soon too.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Shannon. I love chatting with you. So I'm so glad that you could come on Animal Voices today.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm so happy that we met.
I know. It was...
It's like, really? Another person in Alberta? That is amazing.
It was the biggest stroke of luck ever.
Yeah. In Alberta beef country? But, you know, and some people say, oh, I'm in the wrong place, but no, maybe that's
We're
exactly...
in the right place.
Yeah, that's exactly where you should be, where there's... Heroes.
Yeah. And we'll make the difference from here.
Yeah, that's right.
Animal Voices is produced in St. Catharines at CFBU 103.7 FM and broadcast both there and in Toronto at CIUT 89.5 FM. Thank you so much to our great Animal Voices team, Catherine Brigantino, Aaron O'Sullivan, Neil Harvey, Taylor Book, and Kevin Tillman. If you want to contact us, you can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr, and you can always shoot us an email at animalvoices@gmail.com. I'm Daniel Angerdon. Thanks for listening.